Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
He's coming back from the offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long!
A very good morning. I'm Ken Doherty.
And I'm Reggie Corrigan.
And welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Lots to get through in the papers this morning. Leeds are heading up to the Premier League after 16 years away from top flight football. Liverpool, of course, being crowned champions at Anfield against Chelsea. Won't have much time to talk about that. United undefeated streak continues as they edge closer to the top four. And this week's action, of course, the FA Cup semi-finals, Man City against Arsenal. And Manchester United against Chelsea. In rugby, we'll have Reggie and Peter talking through everything, of course, and those dates for the Champions Cup. And, of course, the Pro 14 back in action very soon. In GAA, we'll have Declan Drake speaking about the situation and the process of bringing the sport back in the current times. And also the big news that the Dublin Club Hurling Championship is back as well, of course. We have Noel Marshall as well is with us just before 10 o'clock. And he's talking about his backballer. It's a foam roller, which is very popular for sports athletes. Reggie has used it loads of times, probably still using it. Mm-hmm. And specially designed to self-treat muscles in the upper and lower back. And of course, this week's major moment in sporting history, we'll be reminiscing about Shane Lowry's Open Championship win this time last year. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can text us on 087 1155 777. And we are on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, and our Twitter account at Sport1068. We have a little competition as well. I'll let you know about that just after our interview with Noel Marshall at 9:45. We'll have a look at the papers. And our team throughout the show, of course, the British Open would have been on this week. So where were you? What were you doing when Shane Lowry famously lifted that claret jug this time last year? If you have any memories of that, send us a little text, 087 1155 777. I'm sure the lads remember. Reggie, Peter,
brilliant.
Very good morning to you.
It was an amazing time. I remember it well. And I remember the week after it even better, because the celebrations that he was going around the country with were fantastic. I think I was over, if I'm not mistaken, I was in Portugal at the time. We watched it over there as he lifted it. But it was...
I'd say I had more Guinness in that claret jug than anything else over the years.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The parties afterwards. And I think that's probably what made it such a memorable thing for most people, was the fact that Shane is such a down-to-earth Irishman, let's call him, where he mixes with the people. He's not, you know, he's not untouchable like a lot of the sporting icons that you might see from the States or, you know, even from the UK and places like that. You know, he's someone that's a man of the people, kind of for the people, and he's out there in the middle of them singing songs and drinking pints.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what makes him so popular.
Not a bad singer either. D.L. Fields of Attenroy, Peter.
That's right, yeah. No, Reggie's right. He's an everyday man, isn't he? And the fact that he's steeped in GAA through Offaly, obviously through his father, through his uncles as well, and the fact that he's passionate about rugby, loves Leinster, and he's the best of everything that you want a sportsman, in that he is accessible. He seems to be accessible. He is down to earth. He enjoys himself, but he works hard. And most importantly, he's really skilled.
Mm. And his nan is a legend as well.
That's right.
Remember, she was on having the little drop of brandy and celebrating. And it was a nervous wreck. She was brilliant. But she was a viral success.
But the one thing you'd say, and having worked in sport for many years, the quality of people he's around and he has around him, from family, from friends. Again, I don't know Shane personally that well, but I know his management, Conor Ridge and Brian Moran, and there's a good team around him in Horizon there. He's got a really good family, and I was lucky enough, when I lived in Dubai for a time, I was at the Dubai Open, and it was funny, he was partnered one year with Rory McIlroy, and of course everyone was there to see McIlroy.
Yeah.
But Jesus, by the end, Larry hit a hole in one, We saw him that night, Bonington's, where McGettigan's are one of his big sponsors. They do a end of season night out where it's free drink for like 4 hours. So you can imagine all the expats coming on a Sunday night. Don't forget Sunday's a kind of a working day there. So you're kind of, it's like going out on a Monday night here.
Yeah.
And I went up to him and said, well done, brilliant. This is, you got a car, because you got a car for hitting a hole in one of the par three. He says, no, wrong hole.
Oh, no. So,
But he was, he's a great gift, I think, for us to have. And look, he's, you know, the Ryder Cup and everything like that for next year, you would hope that he will be a really strong contender, because he's proven it time and time again. Last year confirmed it, what we're talking about, that memory. And I've no doubt that he'll go on to bigger and better things over the next couple of years.
I love the story, Ken, from the granny after that, when he came home and she said he came in, and I think he was after winning the Irish Amateur Championship or something like that, and he came in and he said, well, I won the trophy, what do you think of that? And she said, listen, here, Tiger Woods, go up there and get the basket of turf and bring it in and throw it on the fire. So within 30 now seconds he was brought straight back down to earth. And that's, I think that's what's kept him and made him something that we love so much, is that he is that grounded, you know. Never, he's never allowed, and he's like, I can imagine his buddies, he says it himself, they drag him straight back down to earth and don't let him run away with himself.
He's a good lad.
I think that's what's great.
He's
about
got a good team there with Conor Ridge, as you said. I remember winning a car for a 147, but like Shane Lowry, it was the wrong competition. It was one of those little matchbox cars, you know, those matchbox ones that you fit in an Easter egg.
Yeah, well,
anyway, that was my story.
We won't talk about you and cars.
No. Let's move on quickly. Did you do any singing, or did you fill up any cups in your time, Reggie, in any of the pubs?
Well, we certainly filled a cup more than once when we won the
County League. Where did you go on your pub crawl?
Well, it always started in Kiley's and could end up anywhere, basically. That was the way it was back in those days. Kiley's was the pub of the Leinster team next door to the ground there. Yeah. So, certainly the year we won the first Celtic League, which is the Pro 14 now, there was a fair bit of celebrating done that night, too. Thank God there was no social media.
What would be your song of choice at the time?
Probably in the rare old times, because it was kind of the team song, you know.
It's funny, because we made you... Irrespective, I was in the background team and I got to travel on all those trips, and if there's a major event in your life, you have to sing a song as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny, you've the one thing you would learn, and the one thing I would say, John O'Gibbs, who was the great All Black player, and he was part of the backroom team with Joe Schmidt brought in, has the most amazing baritone voice.
Is he?
And there's a guy called Leo Ovata who played for O'Belvedere and played for Leinster for a time as well. It was the most incredible voice as well. So there's a couple of diamonds amongst the rough.
Well, let me tell you, there's more rough than diamond, that's for sure. I heard more tone deaf lads standing up on a bus to sing a song over the years. It was torture.
You've never heard me sing, Reggie?
No, you can sing. But
a lovely voice for selling papers, that's what they say.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, where were you when Shane Lowry won the Claret Jug? If you want to send us a little text, 0871 55 777. It would have been this weekend as well, last year, and it was a fantastic occasion, not just for Shane Lowry and of course his followers, but for the whole of the country as well. Another Irishman lifting that wonderful claret jug, just like Padraig Harrington did a few years before. We're going to have a look at the papers. Of course, Leeds have gone up as well. Super Leeds. A lot of Irish fans here that support Leeds over the years.
Big time. My brother-in-law Kevin is a major Leeds fan, always has been, never wavered. He also is a Rangers fan, so we don't like to talk about that. But he likes to be controversial and different. But Leeds all his life, big time supporter, and has gone through a lot of heartache over the years. So like all of the Leeds fans, but it's great to see them back.
It's fantastic.
Leeds are it's funny, and you know, it's funny looking at what we talked about last week with Jack Charlton and everything else, and the images that are now coming out, like. Leeds are a team that should be in the Premier League. Yeah. You know, they are a top English club over the years, and it's great to see them back up there, and hopefully they can, you know, make an impression in it.
It's funny with Leeds, they don't seem to have too many massive personalities in terms of players, but the person who does dictate the whole club is Marcelo Bielsa. And I think going back to Leeds, go back to Don Revie, obviously Brian Clough for that short period, Harold Wilkinson, David O'Leary as well, who had such success at that time. It's such a unique club. Obviously the huge amount of success in the past, and 16 years is a long time. It's too long for them to be out. I mean, you think that they were on the precipice really of doom and gloom of financial failure. They were gone for all intents and purposes. It's an extraordinary achievement to come back. But Bielsa is a little bit crazy, but he's really, he hasn't played this high pressing defensive game. They're going to cause a lot of problems next year, you'd imagine. I can't see them going out and spending 200 million. I don't think they need to. What they will do is confuse a lot of teams, and hopefully they do back him when he needs it. But you're right. It's kind of the same, I thought, when Villa got up, but Villa just have been very, very poor. I think either it's a case of, I don't know if it's a case of bad management or just bad players they bought in, but hopefully Leeds are there to
Leeds is one of those clubs, isn't it? I mean, it's got such a following. It's got a great stadium, Ellen Road, great atmosphere. I mean, some of the matches with United there over the years
and great supporters.
Great, I mean, that's what I mean. Yeah, great big city,
a very sporting city as well. They got the Leeds Rhinos, who are hugely hugely successful rugby league team as well. So I mean, we played in Leeds. Were you with us that time
when the
match was? We got postponed. Match against Newcastle was postponed because of frost and snow, and we had to go back and play in Leeds on the Tuesday night in the Rhinos stadium, and it was a great spot, you know, as a city and as a place. But you could tell there was a real sporting history in the place.
Obviously, Leeds is synonymous with Yorkshire, and I think Yorkshire Cricket Club. And Yorkshire is one of these. It's like Liverpool. It's like Cork. It sees itself as an independent nation. They really stand out from the rest of the country. So. Yeah. There, you know, people might be interested in cricket, but everyone knows who Fred Truman or Jeff Boycott is. Yeah. And Joe Root now is the captain. They're very much their own people. They're incredibly proud of their city and very proud of who represents them. So, yeah, look, Bielsa seems to have bought into that. And unfortunately, I don't think there's too many Irish. I know Bamford was being toyed with for a while and never committed to Ireland, so good luck to him. He obviously had different ambitions, but it's... it'd be great to see that connection again, because you say there's a lot of long suffering. I know friends of mine from school who stuck with them.
Yeah.
And it's great to see.
The 60s, but lads born in the 60s, was it around 50s, 60s? Yeah.
And then, of course,
a lot older than us, obviously. You know what I mean?
The last old first division as well.
So
and then the Dave O'Leary era and the rock and roll stars they had who never quite got over the line.
So the great Johnny Giles. I mean, that side, back, Billy Bremner. Norman Hunter, I mean, what a team they had back in the 70s.
Yeah, they paved the way. But like, it's interesting at the moment, and no doubt Leeds will, and I hope that they do well when they get up. But it's funny when we're sitting here doing the preview and you're talking about the FA Cup. I don't know whether it's COVID or what it is, but suddenly FA Cup seems to have taken on a whole new life for me anyway, because you think about that matchup. You got Arsenal playing City and Chelsea and United, two semi-finals, four iconic teams. The Premier League's over. It kind of fizzled out, and I know Liverpool fans would be saying, oh, we won the league, blah, blah, blah. That's grand, that's done. But I mean, you now have a competition that we can take an interest in again that seems real, and like what two cracking semi-finals.
In Wembley as well.
I know.
Absolutely. I, to be honest, as a Liverpool fan, I don't think, you know, obviously winning the league is massive.
You stop there.
But the league has fizzled out. There's a lot of sport on. It's great. It's something we've been crying out for months. But there's no interest in football, I don't think, at the moment.
I'm hoping because I mean the league, I was delighted to see Liverpool win it. I mean, I've no issue in saying that. I know Ken hates them, but I've no issue in saying that. I was delighted. I thought they deserved that. I thought it probably should have been crowned before that, but I think you're right. I found it very hard to get into the league. For me, it was already done and dusted, but now this is something that maybe will give me a bit more interest to get back into football.
And the FA
again.
Cup itself needs it.
Yes,
it
did need it badly.
You know, the fairy tale and all the drama and the history around it. But hopefully. There are unusual times, like 7:45 tonight, 6 o'clock tomorrow evening.
Yeah.
Could be good. It's a funny time to have it, but that's TV for you.
I don't hate Liverpool. That's a very scandalous. remark, isn't it?
You know what I mean? Be honest for once.
Listen, there's a lot of Liverpool fans texting Nick say, "Look, we didn't talk about Liverpool last week. I know Jack Charlton and that dominated the show, of course, you know, and we didn't give Liverpool the credit, but we're talking about it now, you know, and that's enough. Let's move on to Man United's unbeaten run. What I think,
yeah, they're going well. In fairness, you know, they're going well. Better
some,
late some than never,
turn,
as they say.
Some teams turn on with the league's over.
Yeah, it's worth, something to work on for next year.
No, but all joking aside, I think with Liverpool, what it's kind of showing, I would imagine that they will win because it's, you know, they're being crowned with the title on Wednesday against Chelsea. So you'd imagine they'll turn back up a performance. It must be very hard to scale a mountain you've already scaled as well.
Yeah.
But what I think you'll find probably with Klopp, he's probably seen one or two players now and gone, you know what, you're either going or you're gone
yeah.
as well. Probably not a bad thing this period as well. Even though it's been very tough. Arsenal deserved their win the other day.
They've been the best team without shadow of a doubt. They played great football and should have probably won it last year. They were only beaten by a point, weren't they last year?
Was just so unlucky for them, really was. Most score or points not to win it, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So, they played really well and good luck to them. First time.
Rugby's got plenty going on as well.
Yeah, yeah. So the new dates for the Champions
All released.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah, Leinster or Saracens on the 19th September. So that's in the Aviva. That's on at 3. And then Toulouse are playing Ulster on the following day on a Sunday at 12:30. So that's good. You know, it just gives a bit more structure, a bit more something to look forward to, and two huge ties as well.
Yeah, big
really
time.
Really exciting.
It's exciting stuff. There's the Interpros, of course, coming. They're not called Interpros anymore, but I'll always call them that in August, which is part of the Pro 14. So that's going to be a very interesting weekend as well. Mm-hmm. But one thing, Peter, the schedule has been released. It's hectic, to say the least. Mm. And for top-notch players, Ken, if things go the way that they're supposed to go, and we don't have any more interruptions because of COVID and everything else, they could be looking at the busiest 12 months of their lives because there's a Lions tour at the end of all of this, which is still staying in place. There's there's international matches being put in there. So everything is being condensed. So you got your Pro 14 finish out, you got your Champions Cup finish out, you got your league over in England, you got the Gallagher, you got your Top 14 as examples for all players in this part of the world. Then you've got your international windows, you've got tours, and then you've got the Lions. So it's absolutely
players will have to mind themselves this year, won't they?
This is the big thing that they're talking about. Where is this player welfare thing and where is blah blah blah. There's talk of I saw the RPI made an announcement, which is the players union for here in Ireland, Ken, that they're taking a 10% reduction in wages for players, which I thought would be more, I'll be honest. I think they've done a good deal there by keeping it at only 10%. I really felt it would be more, but that was the announcement during the week. So they're going to work hard for their money, and you'd wonder what team is going to be left standing by the time that Lions tour comes around.
Yeah, I know we're going to cover rugby again, so there's no point going into too much in depth into the topic. The only thing I'd say about the players is they led the way by taking massive cuts, particularly the highest earners already, so they cannot certainly argue that. I think 10% is fair personally. Look, the bottom line is they're going to have to take more if they needed to take more. That was, you know, it is a business, so I think they led the way. I'd have no issue with that at all, and the important thing is from there is, you know, you don't want to penalise. It's all well and good penalising the highest earners, but they've earned the right to earn that money. Yeah. So you can't just say because someone's on 500 grand that they should knock 150 grand off their salary. That's unfair. I know we'll cover it more in depth. Is a bigger conversation about rugby.
There is, and we'll have that after 10. But to finish on it for now, I suppose the proviso to all of this is that none of it will work if COVID in any way comes back in any shape or form, because, you know, the fact that there's already been a little bit of a blow dealt this week with the fact that gatherings are staying as they were, they're not increasing until at least August the 10th, which is only 12 days before the first match takes place with Leinster. They would have hoped to get crowds back to matches in some capacity at an earlier stage than that, and if they don't get, you know, people back in the door and sitting in the stadium, they won't be able to pay anything. So there's a bigger picture here. It's great to get back. It's great, and like Premier football is different because the TV rights are so huge on it. But they need bodies in stadiums for rugby to be successful.
And will that be revised before the matches are actually due to take place?
Be revised now because we haven't moved to the next stage. Next stage was gatherings of 500 people. Now it's only, I think it's 200 at the moment, 200 outdoor, and I think it was to go to 500. But then if they cleared that by the time the matches come, it could have gone up to 5,000. I mean, I know certainly the likes of Leopardstown, for example, are hoping in September that they might be able to look at a crowd of 5,000 going to the Champions Stakes and that kind of stuff. But we don't know now because of this latest hold-off. So sport is still in a very precarious position in terms of people getting back to the events, and people getting back to the events and buying tickets is what generates the revenue. TV is one side of it, but for the vast majority of sports, they need spectators.
Yeah.
I think, Ken, one of the other consequences of COVID that we didn't get a chance to cover last week, and someone I know you would know very personally, was Professor Aidan Moran, who passed away just in March. Now, I'm only mentioning it because the Irish Times did their obituary last week. Aidan, when I was in college, he gave me a lot of his time just to chat about generally about psychology. He literally wrote the book on it, and he would have inspired a generation like yourself, Padraig Harrington, Ronan O'Gara. Can you just tell us a bit about him, how you got to know him, and how he helped your game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was very surprised. I didn't know about his passing, and I didn't know he was even suffering from cancer. He had cancer for 5 years. And, yeah, he was a leading psychologist in UCD and sort of leading, became a leader in sports psychology. And I went to see him for a couple of years, and he was a lovely man, got a great benefit out of it, loved our little chats in his office there in UCD. And I'm so surprised, as you said, I never realised at all. Otherwise, I definitely would have attended the funeral. So he was very, very helpful to me. And as you said, like, he helped Padraig Harrington, Ronan O'Gara, and lots of many, many more. But great psychologist, put a new, sort of opened up a different world. Because back in those days, even in the 90s, like, players, and particularly snooker players, they weren't using sports psychologists at all. And it was only because I heard that he'd been working with Padraig Harrington that I rang him up and said, could he see me? And I spent many an afternoon in his office there. He was fantastic, yeah.
What kind of triggers specifically would he worked on with you?
Lots of, because like, snooker players are sitting in the chair quite, so you know, your thought process, there's a lot of things going through your mind, you know, and a lot of, you know, confidence is a big thing. Concentration is a big thing. So he would have helped a lot in how to manage that and how to keep your concentration, how to keep your confidence and think about positive things as opposed to, like, you know, sometimes when you come to the table, the negative things that happens in every single sport, you know. So yeah, he was very good. And it's sad like for UCD and sad for you know, for psychology in Ireland, that he was a fantastic leader.
I know from the involvement in rugby as well. I mean, I met him over the years. A lot of it was around, as you said, positive thinking, but also the visualization stuff.
Absolutely.
Which I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, imagining the following day's proceedings. And, you know, some of it seemed like gobbledygook in the early days. You certainly didn't. You found it hard to let it in and allow yourself to listen to that type of thing. In the beginning, you'd be very...
We were all very guarded, weren't we?
Yeah, you would be guarded about it. You're kind of going, that old, as I said, gobbledygook. But funnily enough, you know, you'd be lying in the bed the night before a match and you might start to think about, you know, the process coming for lineouts and your role in each lineout, then in the scrum you're rolling, and then off certain set pieces like lineout and scrums, there would be a next part of the pitch that you needed to be in for a set phase or a set move, for example, that would be going through. And you would find yourself visualising yourself in the position. If the ball comes to me here, well, I'll have this. If the ball comes to me here, well, then there'll be these options. And, you know, it's just something that actually went in.
Absolutely. You know, well, I'll tell you, and this happened to me during that World Championship, like at night time when I was lying in the bed and I was like, I could see myself lifting that cup.
Yeah,
you know, I could see myself lifting the cup and giving it a kiss, because I watched Alex Higgins do it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was like in 1982, when I was only 14, I watched Dennis Taylor do it when I was like 15 and 85. And I could see myself lifting the cup up to the lights and waving it and smiling. And that was the visualisation that I had. Yeah. And that's what he taught me.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's very true, you know. Yeah. I could never do it ever since. I don't know what happened after that. But it happened once for me and it was great.
Well, once is enough.
Anyway, listen, we're talking about poor old Aidan Moran, who sadly passed away back in March. He was a leader of psychology here in Ireland. And sports psychology was one of his big things. And he was a great help to a lot of people here, so he sadly passed away. We're also talking throughout the team of the show is, where were you when Shane Lowry lifted that wonderful claret jug? It was this weekend last year. My goodness, it's a year gone already. How quick it's gone. Give us a text, 087 1155 777. Let us know where you were, what you were doing. Were you in the pub with him? Were you down the Boar's Head? Were you in the Brazen Head? Were you taking a sup out of that claret jug when he filled it with Guinness or whatever else he filled it with? And let us know. 087 1155 777. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to Insure My Van with Ken, Reggie and Peter here. Don't go away. We'll be back after this. Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports is going to give us his lucky 15. He'll be coming up next. A very good morning. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We are running the team throughout the show, talking about the British Open. Of course, famous Shane Lowry won the claret jug last week. If you've got any
thoughts or texts about it. 087 11 55 777.
We're talking about sport and about rugby, Reg, but also in snooker. We have our World Championships coming up in a couple of weeks' time, and it's we've been allowed 30% into, it's the first time, I think, for a sport that's going to actually allow crowds, because we've had a couple of snooker tournaments already since the lockdown with no crowds, just for TV. But the World Championship announced, it was announced yesterday by the government in the UK, that they're going to allow 30% of the capacity in the Crucible to be allowed to. So I don't know how it's going to work. I mean, do they wear masks or gloves or stuff like that?
Well, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about being in that environment?
I have no problem with it at all.
You have none?
No.
Okay.
No. But Ronnie O'Sullivan came out yesterday and he said if there's a crowd at the Crucible, he's not going to play. But well, I think the majority of all the players would like to see a crowd at the Crucible.
I understand that, but England is hardly the safest place in the world at the moment in terms of the virus. Mm. So, I'm amazed at that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, if you look today in the Daily Mail, Michael Clifford has an article about the fact that John Horan, the GA president, obviously was on campaigning for GAA, certainly in local games and everything else, to be allowed have 500 fans. He says, as far as they're concerned, as he's concerned, it's a no-brainer. Like, there was hope that it would move to 200 with the next phase, but that's gone out the window because of the change in the rulings yesterday. But like, there's a picture here of an open stadium and grounds, and 500 people interspersed around it is nothing. It's not going to affect. So, and the risk of transmission is minuscule in that situation.
Exactly.
And
you're
outdoors.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a situation where you're indoors in a very enclosed capacity in a country that's like massively high rates of COVID infection. I wouldn't like to be there. I'll be honest with you. And I'd wear a mask and do everything, but I wouldn't like to be indoors. Outdoors, no problem whatsoever. So I find it amazing. But like, if you look at some of the things that they've done in the UK that we're not doing here, it doesn't really make sense, some of the things that they're doing, and their cases are still climbing. So there's just like, it's just so confusing.
Correct me if I'm wrong before you jump across the desk, Ken. Like, is snooker, is it the one sport where you really, like, as an audience member, do you need the crowd? I know it's different for you there.
Yeah, you definitely, yeah, you do. You need any crowd in any sport. And without a doubt, the crowd doesn't spoil you. And particularly at the Crucible, because they can be so close to you, you know. I mean, and that's very intimidating. I mean, it's not good for during these times, of course. But,
well, I get
but at
that.
The same time,
I'm only saying on the colour front. You know, if you look at a football or Gaelic or rugby or a cricket match, you know, the fans are in colours, they're in shirts, they're in jerseys. You know, just snooker lends itself to be, it's a dark surrounding. Now, I know the atmosphere will inspire you.
You wouldn't even in sport like rugby or football. You don't even see the colour after a while. I mean, all you're hearing, you're not seeing the crowd, you know, you're just sensing them there, you're feeling the noise, you're feeling that atmosphere.
It's the noise and the clapping, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and the adrenaline.
So I'd get
that
the crowd. It actually would feel worse in an indoor. Like, I've played in places that have been empty, you know, just in kind of, let's say, if we're on tour in places around the world, you might be playing an international match in a warm up game during the week with maybe 5,000 people in a 50,000 seater stadium, and it's like, you know, there's no atmosphere whatsoever.
Yeah.
A pointless situation. So I'd get that. And indoors, where you're like, someone drops the chalk, you'll hear it.
Yeah.
You know, it would be a very empty tin can feel. Mm. I'd imagine it would be very hard to play in those conditions.
So it'll be interesting now to see what the reaction of some players. I think most 99% of the players would want a crowd there.
I can't believe
O'Sullivan is the only one to come out and say if there's a crowd there, he's threatening to not play at all.
But I can get that. I mean, this is like,
now,
we
you
can't
might get that, but whether that will actually happen, like, you know what O'Sullivan is like when he says a lot of things, but whether he pulls through on it.
I know,
is,
but
is
the other players, I mean, sometimes the other players are afraid to speak, but Ronnie never is.
Mm.
So maybe they're afraid to actually say what they're feeling. I mean, I just find it, I would not feel comfortable.
I think it's staggering that they're even contemplating. Yeah,
I really wouldn't feel comfortable in England going into a. You say you don't. Would you wear the mask when you're playing? You can't wear the mask when you're playing.
No. I mean, but I don't know whether I don't know whether actually the crowd will have to wear masks or gloves or what sort of what sort of rules they'll have to abide by. That's the interesting thing.
I was listening to a thing during the week, and you hear all sorts of different things. Don't get me wrong, but there were these guys testing for vaccines and everything else, and they did virus control situations, and they put people on a bus with a manufactured pretend virus, let's call it, to see how long it lasts in the atmosphere. And they had one guy at the front of a bus, and 15 meters down the back, they had four or five other people, and the thing made its way. The way they tested is that it's got
the particles.
They can measure them and they can look at it and everything else. Now they were all in suits and it was all, but the stuff moves around. It doesn't just go 2 meters and then stop. Mm. So if you're in a place like the Crucible or any venue for a period of time of 8 to 10 hours, maybe longer, with all of this in the atmosphere, I find that very strange be allowed.
It's a subject that we'll be talking about, of course, and not only in snooker but also in other sports as it goes along. But as one man that's joined us on the line, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about spectators in his sport, Leon Blanche from Boyle Sport. Very good morning to you, Leon.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Yeah, very good, very good. Not so good after those. I've got hobby horses at home that I think would run quicker than the horses you gave me last week.
Yeah, look, it wasn't great, Ken. I think we had a second, we had a third, and I think we had a both.
We had a 10th and 11th.
It wasn't good. I'm surprised you asked me back on here today. But look, hopefully, as you said to me, there's only one way we can go, and that's up.
We can only get better, Leon. Tell us a little bit. We're talking about crowds and stuff. What are the likelihood of crowds back in racing soon, or is there any news on that?
There's nothing at the moment, Ken. Yeah. Like, we haven't heard anything, unfortunately. There was due to be owners. I think it was due to be two owners per horse that was going to be at the Galway races, which starts a week on Monday, but that's now been withdrawn. So, unfortunately, nothing. I think in the last couple of days, maybe the numbers haven't been great. A lot of people are worried that there's going to be a second spike. But I would say, Ken, the way things are going, we'd be looking towards the latter part of the year, really, in terms of getting people back on the race course. I know Goodwood, which actually happens at the same time as Galway, Goodwood are going to do a trial day. They're going to let 5,000 people on the track for one of their glorious Goodwood days. I think it's the last day, so it'll actually be today, 2 weeks, the final day of Goodwood. So they're going to let 5,000 people on and see how it goes. I mean, from kind of my perspective, and I think, you know, anyone who wanted to go racing, I think at our racetracks, you've got such a large space. I think if people are outside, you're keeping your social distancing. Mm-hmm. It seems a racetrack would be the ideal kind of venue to let people in terms of small numbers. But look, we've just got to wait and see. I think the biggest fear is the unknown. I think that's where we all are at the moment. No one seems to know what's happening.
Okay, let's turn our attentions to racing and our lucky 15. Where are we going to go today? Because I know there's a big card on in the Curragh today.
There is, Ken. Look, it's the Judmont Irish Oaks, which is the feature. It's at 7:15. It's a cracking race. 8 runners in that one. I'm going to stay away from the Oaks because I think it's a very, very tricky race. Jesse Harrington, at the young age of 73, is trying to win it with Kay Ann Pepper. She'd have a big chance. But my four for the lucky 15, I'm going to go today. I'm going to start at Newbury in the 12:30, a horse trained by Ed Walker called Coconut. Finished second last time over a mile, stepping up to 1.25. It's a 3-1 chance. A daughter of Australia who, of course, won the Irish Derby. I think this horse, and English Derby, this horse could benefit from the step up and trip to 1.25. So that's the first one. Coconut at 12:30.
Okay.
My next one is going to go to York. Big card at York today. It's John Smith's day. A horse trained by Charlie Appleby in the 155 Moonlight Spirit. It's a 11-4 chance in that 155. I'm going to stick at York for the next selection at 3:05. L Astronaut, trained by John Quinn. This horse runs from the front. It is a sprint. He has a 3-pound penalty, but I just think if he breaks well and gets out in front, I think they're all going to have to do a lot to try and stop him. He's a 4-1 chance.
Okay, 4-1.
4-1. And then finally, I'm going to go to the Curragh for the last selection of the Lucky 15. It's in the Comer Group International. It's a Group 2 over a mile and six. Joseph O'Brien, of course, son of Aidan, has got the front two in the betting. I'm not going to go for the favourite, Twilight Payment. I'm going to go for the second favourite, Master of Reality. Now, in fairness, Twilight Payment beat Master of Reality quite easy over course and distance last time, but that was Master of Reality's first run of the season. I think he'll come on an awful lot for that. He should have won the Melbourne Cup when Frankie Dettori rode him last November, but we're going to go for Master of Reality at 4.45 at 5-2. So that's the four horses in the Lucky 15.
5-2 Master of Reality, 4-1 El Astronaut at York, Moonlight Spirit 11-4 at York, that's the 155, and Coconut in the 12.30 at Newbury. What price is Coconut there?
Coconut is a 3-1 chance, Ken.
3-1 Coconut, that's the 12.30 at Newbury. Moonlight Spirit is the 155 at York, the 305 at York, El Astronaut, and Master of Reality is the 4.45 at the Curragh, 5-2. That's a nice little Lucky 15. Hopefully we won't be calling you Coconut after
Listen, I've been called a lot worse, I'll take that.
That's another stake I owe you, Leon. Well, listen, hopefully when will you be back on our screens?
I would have been back obviously today at the Curragh, but unfortunately we won't be there.
Yeah.
Look, it's all a waiting game. Here's hoping. I know there was a little bit of a kind of a whisper that they were hoping to get some people back on track for the Irish Champions weekend. I know Reggie had mentioned that last week.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed the middle of September. Wouldn't it be great to see people back at such a big weekend at Leopardstown with all the work that's gone on there as well? They're really putting an awful lot of money into Leopardstown. It's going to be a fantastic arena once it's all finished.
Yeah, absolutely. Leon, I appreciate you taking the time this morning to give us your Lucky 15. We'll be posting it out throughout the show and putting it on our Twitter and Facebook handles as well. Coconut, Moonlight Spirit, El Astronaut and Master Reality from Leon Blanche at Boyle Sports. The best of luck, Leon.
Cheers, Ken. All the best, pal.
Peter.
It's funny, like, we're talking about you know, race meets and events like Galway Festival, and something we haven't covered with COVID is just the financial impact locally as well, and economically. It's so significant when you think of the buzz that creates for Galway and for the west of Ireland that you can just immediately write off. I'm in a syndicate in a horse with a gang of friends, and we actually, it looks like for the first time in 3 years, we're going to have a horse running in Galway. We can't go.
It's
just little things like that you would look forward to. But there's a lot of people in a far worse situation. But look, that's the importance, isn't it? Like, we just remember to support those hotels and bars and all the people who are missing out in this time. So
yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a quick short break. We'll be back, and of course we've got a wonderful interview coming up with Noel Marshall. Of course, his intervention is invention, of course, of the backballer, and we're going to talk about that and all the sports people that it has benefited. Noel Marshall coming up right after the break. Very warm welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Now, a very interesting guest we have on the show, Noel Marshall, whose own invention and his own problems with his back caused him to invent this backballer, and there's lots of Premiership sides using it now, Arsenal, Manchester City and Chelsea, and Noel has taken the time to talk to us this morning. A very good morning to you, Noel.
Ken, pleasure to be on with you, my man.
Pleasure to have you on. I mean, I've heard your ads on Sunshine and stuff like that. The backballer, I mean, it's as I said, Arsenal, Manchester City, Chelsea are using it. I saw Stephen Kenny, the Irish team, have been using it as well. Tell us a little bit about the background, because I'm quite interested in this as a snooker player who suffers with a little bit with his back as well. It's quite an interesting little invention that you've come up with there.
Sure, Ken. I think the origins of it go right back to my mid-20s, 20 years ago now. I was competing as an athlete, pushing the boat out, you know, operating at as good as I could, I suppose, at a reasonable level, you know, verging on the international team in terms of middle distance, cross-country, the likes. I had dreams and ambitions of going to qualify for the 2004 Athens Olympics, but the wheels came off the wagon as I really went for it. Just chronic injury took hold. And what happened then for 15 years after that, Ken, is the running shoes got hung up and, you know, the fitness and the likes just went out the window.
Yeah.
The weight piled on. You know, I was operating at under 60 kilos when I was fit. 5 years ago, I was out at 90, and I was what prompted me into action, Ken, was the thought of, or I was told I was going to require back surgery to deal with a herniation between the L5-S1. You know, I was struggling to get out of bed. Just chronic injury. My body had completely tightened up. And I think it was just the notion of getting a back operation at the age of 39 that really prompted me to say, you know, is there something we can do to alleviate this?
And where did this idea actually come from? How did this come into your mind? It's quite interesting how you could just come up with something like this.
Well, I suppose how things fall together, Ken. When I competed, we didn't even have the regular foam roller.
Yeah.
But going on then, I was involved with our local GA team here, and I managed our under-16 hurlers for a few years. And I'd see the youngsters arriving on with foam rollers, and they'd use them ahead of games and training. You know, very simple base of equipment, Ken, a bit of pipe with a bit of foam wrapped around it, you throw it on the floor, you roll yourself out in it, and essentially you're self-massaging ahead of games and matches. And, you know, you're just releasing the muscle, getting the body ready to go ahead of, you know, the big effort coming up. And they just struck me as being clever.
Yeah.
And I purchased one, and once I got on it, there was 2 weeks straight, Ken, that I was on it for at least 2 hours a day.
Wow.
And throughout that process, I just noticed there was something shifted or released within me that really said this thing, you know, the ability for such a simple thing to be so effective. There really is something in this. But, of course, when I'd be on it, I'm not sure if you've much experience with foam rolling.
Yeah. Well, my son does. He plays a bit of tennis, so he uses it quite a bit.
Oh, tennis players would, big time, yeah. Big time. It really helped Roger Federer as well, actually. Mm. But the problem with it is you'd go from one end of the room to the other, and, you know, whilst it was great, it just seemed to lack that control and stability, especially required for the back. When it comes to self-massaging the back, because control, stability is absolutely paramount when you're dealing with the back.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me, now you've obviously, you know, from the foam roller, you got the idea and you've, like, come up with your own invention, and a much more sophisticated invention, of course.
Well, it's a dual-mounted foam roller, Ken. Well, we just have taken the concept of foam rolling and mounted it onto a stable base. And two rollers, so you have that control when you're rolling the back. You're not in that over-earth, compromised position.
Yeah.
So you can safely and securely perform SMR, self-myofascial release, through the thoracic, and just release that, get that relief right through the back.
And tell me, how did the likes of Manchester City, Arsenal, Chelsea, you know, the rugby teams, the international soccer teams, how did they all come to know about it? How did it accelerate so quickly?
I think even Ian Madigan, actually, I'm sure Reggie would know him well there, was bought one within a week of we launching it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just immediately saw, Ken, that this thing made sense. You know, and foam rolling is something that's really taken hold now within, you say, like your young lad there uses it. All young competing athletes have come to appreciate the value of foam rolling and what it can do for them. So, and when people saw this, then it just struck them, I think, as a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, Man City obviously led the, they were one of the very first teams on it, and I think they're just really proactive in terms of getting every edge they can, you know, providing their players with every tool that's available to help them get every last bit out of them when they cross the white lines.
Yeah, fantastic. Reggie, you would have
I'd have a lot of experience with foam rolling. Yeah, I've never actually used the backboarder, but I have seen them. many times around, and I knew a few of the players were using them all right, and it does make sense, and certainly with the foam roller for the lower back. I thankfully, although I fractured, you'd be familiar with the back, no, I've fractured four transverse process back in the day when I was playing, and I was out for 12 months, but thankfully I've never had any back problems. But I have had stiffness in that area, and I've used foam rollers before, so I get it. I understand how they would be very effective for certain.
That's the thing. Like when you have a chronic injury like that, you'll develop scar tissue that will cause, you know, that little pull in the muscle that over time can lead to the injury. So the, you know, the mobilization and the release through that is what's key in terms of, you know, remaining active and mobile and staying fit and healthy.
Yeah, apart from the football and the rugby, and what other sports? I suppose most people, you know, in most sports, because I mean, even as far as snooker players could use it, I suppose everybody. Who else has famously used it as well, Noel?
Well, Roger Federer, I think, is the Roger got it ahead of. Roger was written off with back injury. Over 3 years ago, and he got one through Paula Radcliffe ahead of 6 weeks out from the Australian Open.
Okay,
and he went on and won that Grand Slam, you know, when he was considered yesterday's man.
Yeah.
And he's back up in the top four since.
Fantastic.
But it's gone across the board at this stage, kind of like it's applicable to everyone really.
Brilliant.
Anybody who just wants to be.
And we don't have one for everyone in the audience here, but we are giving one away in a competition for one of our lucky listeners this morning as well.
And I tell you as well, Kim, what I've done for you there just now is I set up a promo code for your listeners. They kind of avail of a 10% discount by punching in Sunshine 1068.
Okay.
So promo code Sunshine1068 if anybody wishes to hop on our website backballer.com.
Okay.
Put in that promo code and avail of an extra 10% off.
Okay.
And get on it.
Okay.
Get on it.
All right, now listen, thanks very much for that, and we're going to give one to our lucky listeners. We're going to run the competition after the 10 o'clock news, but best of luck, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us this morning.
Ken, Reggie, it's been a real pleasure, guys.
Right.
I'm been a fan all my life, so fair play to you.
Okay, thanks, Noel.
Thanks so much, guys. Okay. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Noel Marshall, inventor of the backballer. There you go. One for everyone, the odd. Joe, you'll have one as well, will you? Okay, we're going to run a competition. We're going to let our listeners, all you have to do is text WIN to 087 1155 777 and to be in with a chance to win a backballer. There you go, Reg.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport. We've loads more coming up in the next hour. We're going to in-depth with Rugby GAA with Declan Drake and Alan Cawley, of course, as well. Super Leeds are back in the Premiership. We'll be back after the 10 o'clock news. A very good morning. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. We are talking about this famous moment last year already. Can you believe it's a year? This weekend, of course, our magic moment in sport as we turn back the clock. Shane Lowry winning the Claret Jug. It was a fantastic, becoming the British Open champion, of course, last year. And he was only the second ever Irish golfer after Padraig Harrington to win the tournament. And he finished with a score of 269 and 15 under par. And who could forget those scenes of him returning back to his hometown of Clara, County Offaly, and holding the Claret Jug up to the nation. Let's have a listen.
Come on then, Shane. Knock it close.
I hit my tee shot there in 18. That was it. Like, that was, you know, I was home and holes then, and I started to enjoy it then. It was just incredible.
Shane Lowry is the Open champion.
To walk down 18, crowds going wild, singing ole ole. It's like it's like something that, you know, I just can't. I couldn't believe it was happening to me.
Score of 269, and the champion golfer of the year is Shane Lowry.
Yeah, fantastic scenes there and wonderful to listen to him. And of course, when he took it back to Clara as well, County Offaly, as you said, Reg, back to his family, yeah. Back to those wonderful scenes, wonderful crowd scenes. I mean, he took that cup everywhere, didn't he?
It never left his side, there's no question about it. It was amazing. I mean, as we said, Shane Lowry was kind of one of those sports people who everybody took to straight away since the time in 2009 when he won the amateur, as an amateur, won the Irish Open. And, you know, that was such a huge achievement in its own right to win that. And from that time on, he was always a favourite, a firm favourite in Irish people and sports fans. But to win the Open and the Claret Jug and... you know, to go into it as very much a major, major underdog going into that. I mean, very few people foresaw that he would go the distance that he went, and to go into that and win it, and such a likeable character, you know, the whole country just got behind it and got on Lowry fever for it, and he's set up forever as a result of it. But the real reason is because he just remained the same. He didn't change, yeah. You know.
And played Peter as well, with a big smile on his face as well. I think that's what the Irish love, you know, the big hearty smile on his face always.
Yeah, as we said, he's an everyday man and he's very normal for whatever we deem normal as, you know. But he's incredible talent, you know, first and foremost. It's all, the good thing about golf, particularly more than other sports, it doesn't dictate you have to be a certain size. And rugby is good that way. You can be tall, you know, tall, short, large, small, and it'll cater for a position for you. With that, with golf, but I think what you find with Shane is he probably works his backside off to get where he is. Nothing has come easy to him, but he's definitely got raw natural skills that he's definitely brought to the fore. And look, he's been successful all the way through, from underage right all the way through. And it's something that I think Irish golf can be very proud of, his progress. Because he's not just shown it, you know, in a flash of the pan, winning a tournament, and that can be not easy, but that can be done and managed with players if they're lucky, if the weather's with them or whatever else. But actually, for him to do it consistently and win trophies consistently, you know, winning last year, winning over in America regularly as well, winning in Dubai, you know, winning right around the Middle East, Europe, he's a real national treasure for what he's done.
Yeah,
and he's and long may it continue, and you just feel with him now, he's got hopefully 10, 15, 20 years ahead of him where he can really hammer home now that dominance.
Yeah, the fact that the British Open is not on this year, it would have been around this weekend, Reggie, he gets to call the cup for another year.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd be too displeased with that, will he?
Easiest win he'll ever have.
Absolutely. I mean, I suppose the thing about Shane is he burst onto the scene with that win in 2009 and then turned pro after that. And then, you know, he had a lot of work to do and he was working hard during those years. And you're kind of looking at his, you know, will he actually achieve those heights again, you know, and will he really get back to the peaks? And he had good performances and then would go off the boil and in and out. But he was, whereas let's say the likes of Padraig Harrington had kind of more consistency and was better known. Better known and that kind of stuff. And even the likes of Graham McDowell, and we've had so many amazing golfers in this country. But other names were kind of stealing the headlines a little bit, and Shane wasn't maybe getting, even though we all knew how good he wasn't maybe getting the same level of headline grabbing that others were. And I think that's why last year became like just the absolute icing on the cake.
Yeah, like it's like in football. You know, a teenage talent can burst onto the scene in the Premier League. Second season, maybe found out, but you know, people can assess them. There is a step up physically to do it week in, week out, because that's the name of the game, isn't it, in sport? It's consistency. But, you know, so there is a natural growing up process with it. And you're doing it in the public glare. You're competing with the very best of the world every single week. And he still manages, even if he has a perceived dip. And it's very difficult when you're going into a competition of 80, 90, 100 people, trying to, you know, only one winner. That's not easy, for him to achieve. And it's a very lonely sport, even though as we mentioned, the team he has around him as well. Ultimately, it's all on him.
Yeah. Like when he turned pro in 2009, it took him another 3 years to win his first title, which was in Portugal. So that was 2012. And so there was kind of, people were wondering after that amazing success, there was kind of a, well, yeah, is he going to actually push on? And, you know, Paul Dunne has gone through something similar at the moment. And I see Paul is, there's a big article with him in The Independent today talking about that, and basically Shot at Redemption is what the headline is. So, I mean, for someone like him, he's actually probably using Shane Lowry as his inspiration, you know, because he's been struggling a little bit and lost his tour card and everything else, whereas he can look to Shane and see, well, you know, it didn't just happen. It took an awful lot of hard work, an awful lot of persistence and keep going and everything else. And from that first win for Shane in 2012 to last year, it's a big gap to get the absolute adulation that he's gotten. So I think golf, like that, professional golf, it's one of the toughest sports that there is. There's no question about it, because it's all down to you. A bit like yourself, Ken.
Tennis.
Any of those individual sports. It's just so different.
What's the future now for Shane Lowry? Where does he go from here?
He can go as high as he wants in the game, and that's not being patriotic or jingoistic about it. Like, he is an outstanding talent. He's proven it time and time and again. He's won all over the world. He's won with the best fields at the peak of their game. You look at the golf now, I'm not a golf expert by any stretch of the imagination, but you're looking at the quality of golfers at the moment. Like in tennis, it probably is as good as it's been nearly in my lifetime in 30, 40 years, with the number of players who come in on any given week, not to mention the competition in Ireland that we've already touched on, and with players, gifted players like Roy McIlroy's who are out there, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Tiger Woods. You know, it's an extraordinary achievement to win any week. So for him to have done that, and let's face it, with golf, we've already mentioned the competition there, you can't win every week. It's impossible, which kind of makes Woods' achievements and McIlroy's achievements all the better. And you look at the calibre of players who haven't won in the big stage consistently, you know. So it's he can do it. I suppose for him, Ryder Cup would be massive. That'll be the next massive tick on the list for him. We've got Padraig Harrington there, who he's very close with friends-wise, but that won't count for anything when it comes to selection, because that's Harrington's reputation on the line. But I tell you, if there was a Ryder Cup being played next week, I don't think Harrington would have any issues picking him in.
You see, the question always is, I mean, when he won the Irish Open as the amateur in 2009, it was, okay, is it a flash in the pan? Also, it's a type of course and an environment that he would
suit him
down to the ground and loves. I mean, openly has stated that he loved that. But as I said, then he pushes on, and over the next number of years, and don't forget, it did take him that decade to prove himself over those number of years, winning in Portugal, runner-up in the PGA Championship in 2014, taking the Bridgestone Invitational in the United States. Those types of things, you know, championships that are in different grounds, on different courses, in different environments, in different fields, with American players and everything else. You're having to prove yourself out in Abu Dhabi for the HSBC Championship. He won that as well. You know, when you're trying to ask, is it a flash in the pan? Well, no, because you're seeing that he's gone around the world, competed in all the major events, and held his own in that, and improved as time has gone on. And sort of, I think he'd probably admitted himself, he's changed certain aspects of his game that have made him even better. And that's why he ultimately got to where he got to. So where does he go from here? He can go as far as he wants. I mean, he's there now, has proven he's as good as anybody else in the world and can compete with them. And it's brilliant to be able to say that about someone that is, you know, one of our own and normal.
Yeah, absolutely. And we won't forget what he did last year, of course, winning that beautiful Claret Jug. And a lot of people down in the Boar's Head, we have Texas from the Boar's Head, we have Texas from Esker Hills, who played golf down there with his father and everything. They'll always remember at the times the Boar's Head, the Brazen Head, O'Donoghue's Pub, and many, many I think he even went up to the Blue Light, as far as the Blue Light as well.
he went everywhere.
Johnny Fox's for a bit of smoked salmon and brown bread and a bit of Irish dancing and everything got thrown in. But it was a great time, and good luck to Shane, and indeed best of luck to him. Of course, he was at the Memorial this week, missed the cut unfortunately, but I'm sure there's plenty more to come, and hopefully a few more majors as well. That's Shane Lowry this week in Major Magic Moments in Sport. You listen to Dublin's Talking Sport, 087 1155 777. We are giving away one of Noel Marshall's inventions, the backballer.
I have to say that very gently. We are giving away. So all you have to do is just text WIN to 087 1155 777. And a lot of people texting in about our racing from Leon Blanche and his tips. I'm going to give them out to you now. Coconut, the 1230 in Newbury. Moonlight Spirit is the 155 at York. The 305 at York is El Astronaut. And Master of Reality is the 445 at the Curra as well. So that's it. Coconut, Moonlight Spirit, El Astronaut and Master of Reality. I'll call that out before the end of the show. We're going to talk a little bit about rugby. You mentioned the Champions Cup fixture dates already announced, Reg.
Yeah, so...
big matches coming up in that.
Yeah, so it's... Peter has the dates
four,
there.
The four quarterfinals are as follows. So you've got Clermont against Racing 92, you've got Exeter against Northampton, so big Anglo derby, big French derby, but then you're straight into Leinster Saracens on Saturday the 19th September at 3 p.m. Mm. And we've got Toulouse against Ulster the following day on Sunday the 20th at 12:30. So they're four incredible games.
Yeah, Leinster Saracens... what sort of team will they have now?
I mean, they've been,
What would you expect there? I mean, Leinster obviously be favourites, but what about Saracens? Because they're a bit of a wounded animal, aren't they?
They're a wounded animal, but if you think about it, it's probably the last major game they're going to have for over a year. Mm. They've managed to retain nearly all of their superstars. Mauro Toje and Owen Farrell were announced this week. That's a huge fillip for them.
Time.
Yeah. And I think when you look at them, they're going to be targeting what's going to happen with those stars. They're not going to play week in, week out in the championship next year. So they'll be targeting specific games to get them match fit. Eddie Jones has kind of admitted now, because he'd no other choice, I'm going to have to pick these guys.
Yeah.
And you can't ignore the quality that he has, Jamie Georges and all these guys. So I think the reality is that Saracens will be playing a Leinster team who, let's guess, 85% of the squad would have faced each other in the final last year. So they know each other intimately well, never mind playing Ireland, England regularly. It's going to be a hell of a game. And it's, you know, the fact there's neutrality, we've seen it in football. Southampton are going over and getting results. When there's no game, it does level the playing field.
I think
that Saracens will probably fancy their chances going over to the Aviva. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, and it doesn't mean that Leinster are going to lie down at all.
Yeah.
But it's going to make for a really incredible game. And the same you can say for Toulouse against Ulster as well. Ulster will probably feel now going to France mightn't have the same fear that it might have had, because Toulouse were flying in advance of COVID as well.
And the problem, Ken, is, you know... We don't know where teams are.
Yeah, fitness levels,
fitness,
everything.
Form, players' individual ability to get back to that level again. In a normal season, you develop momentum and you're able to get into a role and get into a rhythm. And Leinster certainly were in that situation. Now they've gone through what everybody else has gone through, and they're trying to come out the other side of it and be as hit the ground running ready as possible. But that's very, very hard to predict. It's very hard for all of us. So this game now, where Leinster would have been, in my eyes, much more firm favourites beforehand, many will still put them as favourites, but I think it's become a much more level playing field in the sense that we really don't know.
For people who are listening in, how difficult is it when you've had that momentum and then you stop for, like we have since COVID, how difficult is
it's
it
really
for those players?
It's impossible to go back to where you were.
Really?
Yeah, it's impossible.
Even if they were training if they have camps or whatever.
There's no replacement for the games, the momentum, the psychology of, you know, just drawing on the game from last week or the week before, maybe, where you're feeling rhythms, like things feel natural to you, they start to fall into place, and there's all that kind of stuff. There's no rustiness. There's like it becomes instinctive, you know, to play in a certain way. It becomes very much instinctive, and it just happens.
Yeah,
where you don't have to think about it as much, and the best teams don't have to think, and the best players don't have to think. They're just in the moment, because we talked about sports psychology earlier on, because it's sort of muscle memory is there in the brain, and you know what comes next and you know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when that stops, and it doesn't matter, like training or any of that kind of stuff cannot replace that feeling of, you know, from your sport. It doesn't, like, the rhythm, the feel,
the touch
it can't bring that back. And training doesn't do it, because you don't have that intensity. Now,
people who say, though, you know, well, you know, these players had a hard season and they'd be a little bit torn. Now they've had a good break.
It'd be fresher. But I mean, so will Saracens and so will everybody be coming in fresh. people like Billy Vunipola and these guys were injured.
Yeah.
So there's time there where they get to recover. So the likes of Saracens could actually have a stronger team in many ways.
Saracens have lost a few fellas. But the interesting thing is Felipe Contepomi, who's, aside from being a backs coach with Leinster, is obviously a doctor as well. Mm. And he was asked about that, you know, for a Johnny Sexton, for instance. He said, does that mean that's going to give him greater longevity in his career? And like, in theory, you would think, of course it will. This is the positive you might take from a COVID situation. But, you know, it does take hard. Like, Reggie will know, as you get older, it takes you longer to get back into a routine. And that's not to say that you can come in and you'll hit the level. And someone like him, Johnny is a high caliber player, so he knows what his body, what he needs to do to get himself in the right frame of mind, physically and mentally. But is that going to be the case for everybody? Mm. And we don't know yet. We don't know whether it's going to be a guarantee of it, whether people have the same hunger, the same motivation. Mm. You'd like to think so, because as Reggie said, it's a big, big year, calendar year coming up. There's a lot of variables.
But surely when the players, when they're so used to playing every week, they'll miss it so much they can't wait to be bursting at the seams to get back.
They're mad to get back into it. That's not what I'm talking about. So like, for example,
Dan Levy's coming back. That's a huge
Yeah, that's a huge thing. But I mean, Dan Levy hasn't, you know, what has he been, 16 months now at this stage, I think it is. You know, Dan, you can be, I'll give you an example. You can be physically in the absolute peak of your condition, but physical ability is nothing compared to skill ability. Yeah. They're two completely different things. So you could have someone that you would look at who might be, for example, a bodybuilder. I mean, amazing muscle, blah, 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 blah. Wouldn't be worth a damn at rugby because of no skill levels.
Yeah, yeah.
And vice versa. Do you know what I mean? You look at a rugby player and say, he's huge, he must be great in bodybuilding. But no, obviously not. Strength athlete, you know, a thrower, a shot putter. You'd imagine maybe rugby players would be good at that. No, their skills are not, the two are not compatible. So the point is, the skill that you, what wins rugby and what wins any sport or any game is your skill levels, not your physical ability. That's a big part of it. But you have seen people, golf would be a good example, who maybe don't look in the peak of physical condition at times, let's say, and their skill levels are through the charts, and they can do anything with a golf ball, and that goes right across the board in any sport. So what falls down or what isn't quite on, you know, the top level is those skills, because they're fine tuned. And when you're on a roll and when you're in peak, they're instinctive.
Yeah.
But when you're not, and when you've had breaks, they're forced. And when you force things, errors creep in.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen it with the footballers, though. You know, the footballers have come back and they seem to have got back into their stride. You know,
some have, and some haven't.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Southampton and City have.
Yeah.
Liverpool haven't. Now, that different motivations. I mean, you know, Everton again have been quite sluggish.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not trying to say that these fellas aren't fit. Of course they're fit. But it's that mental toughness, as well as the sharpness, as well as the skills that Reggie's talking about. It's a combination of everything, really. And, you know, maybe some players just need that motivation.
Yeah.
Maybe they, you know, they feel isolated without the crowd. Maybe they need, positively or negatively.
Mm.
Look, it's a really new space we're in, where there's going to be discussions about this in the next 5-10 years, the analysis of it.
Mm.
We're just guessing. But I think what it does definitely do is lessens the pain of having to travel, and certainly levels the playing field somewhat.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. What sort of training would they have been doing up to this?
They weren't allowed to do anything for a long time other than at home.
Right.
So fitness levels would have dropped because no matter what way you look at it, you can't keep the level of intensity up that they get when they're being trained by their trainers. So they would have been doing quite a bit of physical conditioning to try and get that level of peak fitness back again. And then they would have been doing a lot of skill work on top of that as well, just to try and get into a level where they are.
And of course, with the gyms being closed and everything, so that's
everything was home training. You have to remember there was a 12-week period there where everybody was in the same boat. Mm. I mean, whether you were a professional athlete or not, you weren't allowed to go to the gym, you weren't allowed to go outside your range. There was a few, you know, cheap shots taken at Ulster players for going training in the park and all this kind of stuff. People were trying to find ways, so they had to be the same. They were under the same lockdown rules as everybody else.
Like, sports people are social creatures as well. They're used to being in a team environment, and I think what COVID has probably shown, and it was something that Guy Easterby spoke about, was crediting the staff, the likes of the sports scientists, the likes of, he mentioned Ronan O'Donnell, who's the operations manager at Leinster, and the logistics around trying to make sure that only small groups of players can go into gyms in specific areas at any time. We might think, well, that's fairly straightforward. It's not, particularly with the testing that has to go on. So you'll just get a sense now, I think, an appreciation of the role everyone does within a sport, and it's not unique to rugby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot of changes happening, though, Ken, which, you know, myself and Peter talk about now. you've got sport coming back. That's great. So we've got the Interpros. We've got the dates for the Champions Cup. We know there's a timetable there that's kind of pretty extensive and pretty intense for the players. There's no question about it. They're going to be tired guys at the end of that Lions tour. But an announcement yesterday, which I found very interesting, Peter, was that New Zealand Rugby are looking at basically pulling away from the championship and setting up their own in the Southern Hemisphere championship, which means that they won't be playing games with the South African teams. Now, that seems to immediately open the door up, because we talked briefly about it last week, for four South African teams to come north and join the Pro 14. The two that are currently in existence there would probably get dropped out of it, the Cheetahs and the Lions. And four teams from South Africa would come in to replace them to bring it up to a 16-team competition. Now, I think that has huge repercussions for Southern Hemisphere rugby, because basically what's happening there is Argentina now will be out of the equation, because, you know, they'll be out of that that championship won't exist anymore. So it was Australia, Argentina, New Zealand and South Africa. Well, if New Zealand are going off on their own and South Africa are coming here, well, the other two can't, and Australia rugby's in dire straits anyway. New Zealand have invited them to make submissions to the competition that they're talking about setting up. Now Argentina are out in the cold. They don't have anywhere to go. So the South African teams, I believe, would actually benefit from the move to Pro 16, because they'll have a lot more games. They'll be in the time zones are better, if you know what I mean. There's only an hour difference jet lag wise. Yeah. Okay, it's a longer distance. But the whole structure of the world game is really, really changing because of that.
I think what this says to me, looking at this from the outside, looking in without any great insight on it, is that it's such a pity. Japan should be the next country going joining that team.
Yeah.
We saw the success and the marketability of Japan as a territory. But what that says to me is Argentina, the pull for Major League Rugby in the USA, Canada, that's where the focus is going to be. So they're going to try and align geographically as well. So it'll mean that USA, Argentina, whatever else, and then Europe will be Europe. And while we all want to see, this is the big problem that rugby has. It's not a global sport. It's got huge interest. It's an amazing sport. Even in Ireland, it's still fifth choice sport in the country.
Yeah.
And despite all the success of the national teams and provincial teams for many years, and world rugby has to ask itself the question: does it want to compete and become a global sport and a proper global sport? Does it want to stop the pillaging of Pacific nations? The Fijis, Tonga, Samoas, are they going to provide them? They're the countries who should be entering these.
Well,
they're not in a position to.
Yeah, but there's talk of bringing in a Pacific nation team. In a sense, yes, you could say the tokenism, but they're talking about actually building a franchise and bringing that into this new league that New Zealand are talking about. So you'd have some the Australian teams, New Zealand teams, and a Pacific Island representative team. Now, you could say it's tokenism, but it might be a start. You know, it could be a start.
What that also says to me is that the South African rumour with Six Nations and Pro 14, or if that becomes Pro 16, is definitely gathering legs.
Oh, big time. Yeah. And this is where the money men coming in to buy up the game is going to be interesting. And I also see it as a form of defence by the New Zealand team. So basically, the All Blacks is the biggest pull in world rugby. And they have huge sway with world rugby in dictating how things happen or don't happen. So this might be a little bit of a power push by New Zealand that, you know, we're taking control of our own game. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest game in New Zealand. There's no other sport like it over there.
Yeah.
So they can feel they can contain it within themselves and go back, as it did for many, many years before professionalism, of powerhouse rugby and club game within New Zealand. And they feel that they can do that. The All Blacks will still be the biggest draw, so they will still dictate massive revenues from advertising and everything else. If they keep their players at home and have a professional league there, they're actually improving the All Blacks' chances.
What are they actually proposing? How many teams?
They haven't come up with the finer detail of it, but it would be it would be maybe 8 teams from New Zealand, 4 teams from Australia, and maybe one Pacific nation or 5 from Australia.
Okay. We haven't really, I'm not too sure how much more time we can kind of cover on rugby, but the biggest team in the world outside of the All Blacks is the Lions. And the Lions, you know, we're talking, and Reggie, I'd be interested in your views on potential for CVC coming in now and investing in Pro 14 and the ramifications for Six Nations. The Lions commercially does such a job for the developing nations, or, sorry, not developing nations, but nations like South Africa next year will be so massive from a tourism point of view, mm-hmm. from marketability, from sponsorship, everything. And so that's your flagship team, probably the only team in the world who consistently make money. Mm-hmm. They're the only profitable team, as far as I can see, who consistently make it. Now, obviously,
New Zealand would make money?
Huge money. They're losing money as well, but that's more of a consequence of the times we're living in as well.
But also, you're mixing the two. How do I put this? The Lions is a franchise as of sorts. The Lions are not supporting home unions. Let's say New Zealand have to run their whole country's rugby organization.
Supporting home economies.
Well, the Lions aren't doing it. The tourism is doing it for the nation that they go to. Yes, as in South Africa will make huge booms out of it and everything else. But what I mean is New Zealand rugby has to pay for all of New Zealand rugby. You know, the lower end teams, Irish rugby, there are a few are supporting clubs and Leinster and Munster and Ulster by, you know. So the Lions don't have that. The Lions are very fortunate in the sense that other nations are paying for their training of their players and their this, that and the other. I mean, they're the ones that are, like, the RFU are paying for their training of the players, as are the RFU, as are the Welsh Rugby Union.
They're getting well remunerated for it as well.
Yeah, they get remunerated for it, but they don't have quite the same level of outgoings to support the grassroots, let's say, that the home nations would have.
Well, all I know is, looking at South Africa, it's an absolute disaster if fans can't travel there next year, and it'll lose a lot of the lucre
for tourism.
But the tourism knocks onto everything, Reggie. It's eyes on the country. It's the development of the game. It's the promotion of sport.
Okay, so. Well, that's a chat for another day. Unfortunately, we're running out of time to talk about the rugby section. We're just past 10:30. We've got Declan Drake to come on the show, and of course we've got Alan Cawley to finish as well. I'm sure he'll have a say on Leeds being promoted to the Premiership. But very interesting chat, boys, I must say, about rugby and the future of rugby, and of course what's going to happen with the Champions Cup, with New Zealand, with Australia, with Argentina, and many more. So we'll sort of touch on that over the next couple of weeks, Reg, I suppose, yeah. And lots of texts coming in about our Lucky 15 from Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports. Coconut at Newbury, the 12:30. Moonlight, a Spirit in York in the 155. El Astronaut, the 305 also in York. And the 445, Master of Reality at the Curra. 5-2, 4-1, 11-4 and 3-1. We are running a competition, of course, as well, for a chance to win one of those backballers from Noel Marshall, who's a great invention. All you have to do is just text WIN to 087 11 55 777 and we'll announce the winner just before 11 o'clock. You're listening to Dublin's Talk and Sport on Sunshine 106.8. With thanks to insuremyvan.ie. We'll be back right after this. A very good morning. Welcome back to Dublin's Talk and Sport on Sunshine 106.8. With thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Keep sending those texts in to 087 11 55 777 to be in with a chance to win one of those Noel Marshall inventions, the backballers. All you have to do is just text WIN 087 11 55 777. Loads of texts coming in to try and get one of those wonderful inventions. We're going to talk GA now, and Declan Drake joins us on the line. A very good morning to you, Declan.
Hello, Ken. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. You must be pretty excited. The old hurling is back.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic to see it back. I was never so excited to see a Wexford Championship match as I was last night. You know, it was fantastic to see live hurling again, and certainly over the course of the weekend, Ken, we have a feast in the capital here with eight games taking place in the opening round of the Dublin Senior Hurling Championship. A lot different this year, of course, because in previous years, you know, with the structure of the championship, you would play two games in the month of April, take a break then until Dublin footballers All-Ireland bid was complete, because there are some guys on the team who are dual club players. Yeah. But this year you're coming in, albeit, you know, in July, which you're going to run it off over a shorter period of time. So it's going to be brilliant over the next number of weeks in both hurling and indeed football as well.
Yeah. And we've got a cracker coming up with the Crokes taking on Ballywell and St. Denis.
Yeah, absolutely. That's in Group 2 and it's taking place tomorrow afternoon in Parnell Park at 3 o'clock. Now, of course, with the restrictions
restrictions that we have due to the COVID situation at the moment, no more than 200 people allowed. The good news is the game has been shown live on TG Car tomorrow afternoon. Mm. So that's a game that would have attracted a few thousand to Parnell tomorrow.
Yeah,
nice that we have that. Two teams who will be certainly at the business end of the championship in a couple of months' time. They've carved up the title between them over the last few years, and could have been in the mix as well. So it'll be a fascinating game there tomorrow afternoon, no doubt.
Yeah.
But another interesting one is in Group 3, actually, this afternoon. Next door neighbours, Foggs and St Jude's, are meeting in O'Toole Park at 2 o'clock. So that'll be an interesting battle there between those two. And we mentioned Coola, of course, the defending champions. They open their campaign this evening. They're out in Bray when they take on Thomas Davis from the Kiltipper Road there, who have come up to Senior A hurling this year. So a fantastic occasion for them to take on the county champions this evening.
Wow, mouth-watering prospect indeed for them.
Declan,
absolutely.
Peter here, how are you doing? I was just going to ask you about Dublin hurling generally this year. Obviously, it's very difficult to gauge form when there's been no matches, but do you feel, did you see enough signs of progress under Matty Kenny last year that you felt that, you know, that Dublin hopefully, if they can get, you know, come out of these club games unscathed and get some form for key players, that they can emerge and really try and get through Leinster firstly and see how it goes?
Well, of course, during the lockdown in the last couple of weeks, Peter, we had the championship draw, the revised championship draw on the Leinster Championship, and Dublin came out against Laois in the opening round. And of course, we know what happened in Comore Park just over a year ago as well. So tremendous incentive there for Dublin this year. I think perhaps in some respects the break will have been good for them because the National League campaign hadn't gone so well. They've had time now to regroup, and I can be assured that the county players on all these teams that are playing over the next 2 days will be absolutely chomping at the bit. And I'm sure Matty and the selectors will be very busy people as well, keeping an eye on as many games as they can. Of course, they overcome Laois in the first round of the championship. You're playing Kilkenny then in the Leinster semi-final.
Mm.
So out of the frying pan into the fire there, very much so. Mm. But look, tremendous. I just hope that everything goes well over the next couple of months and we are able to look forward to these games. But in regards to your question about the progress under Matty Kenny, yes, undoubtedly we have made progress under Matty. Now, the revised structure of the championship this year puts extra pressure on. You know, we don't have the round robin this year to get it right, if you like, in two or three games to get through. We've got one chance at it, the old-fashioned way. Some people might say it's the best way to a large degree. I would agree with them as well. I'm really looking forward to that occasion, even when it comes up.
And what about on the football front, Declan? I mean, players are probably itching to get back as well as soon as possible. What's the news from the football front?
Yeah, well, of course, we have, and the club scene is back next week, thankfully, as well.
Yeah.
But on the inter-county front, the championship draw was, well, we had been paired with Westmeath in the quarter-final, so that remains as it is. So it'll be very interesting as well. We have two games remaining in the National League. We were to play Meath, of course, just as the lockdown was announced. And we're to finish with an away game with Galway in Salt Hill as well. So they're going to be played, which is good warm-up, I think, for the championship campaigns. But yeah, no doubt, Ken, like the hurlers over the next 2 days, the club footballers next week will be absolutely itching to get back. And unfortunately, again, we have the restrictions. So hopefully streaming and things like that will be available to bring as many games as possible to as many people as possible.
Yeah, and what about the crowd situation? I mean, we're talking about crowds in all different sports. What about in GAA? I suppose they will be under the same umbrella as every other sport, the small amounts initially until we'll see how the restrictions until the August the 10th and beyond.
Absolutely, yeah. They're restricted to 200 people in total. And a lot of all these hurling games in the Senior A Championship this evening are all ticket matches.
Yeah.
And the advice is if you don't have a ticket, don't come to the venue because you won't get in. It's as simple as that. Mm. There was a sense of, I think John Horne was appealing yesterday for it to be increased to 500. Now, if you remember at the start of May when he appeared in the first programme of the Sunday game, he was doubtful that we would have any people at matches this year with the situation the way it was at that particular time. Hopefully, come August 10th, I think, is the next review around about that time.
Yeah.
The numbers can be increased just as both the club hurling and football championships heat up significantly.
Yeah, and the final of the All-Ireland is going to take place in an unusual time this year.
Yeah, we've got Christmas, eh? At least we'll have 2 weeks to celebrate six in a row if it comes off. Anyway, I suppose that's the only good thing you can say about it. But that's going to be a fascinating prospect, whatever way it works out. And of course, the ladies are back in action as well, we must say, Ken. They start their club league campaigns last night, and they have a similar type of situation to run off a championship as well. So, no doubt, plenty of work for Mick Bowen and his selectors to do over the next couple of months as well. But look, it's just great to have it back.
Yeah, it'll be unusual to see Croke Park, hopefully, with the Dubs in the final, the Dublin jerseys, and Santa hats.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what type of numbers we can have in the final. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's all whole aspirational stuff at the moment. But look, please God, things will go well over the next few weeks, and then come that August the 10th, the numbers can be more than doubled at games around the place.
Well, let's hope it's going to be a Merry Christmas for Dubs fans and the Dublin team as well. Declan, always a pleasure having you on. Have a great weekend, and look forward to speaking to you next week.
Okay, take care, Ken.
Declan Drake there with all the GAA news. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back with Alan Cawley. He's going to, I'm sure, gloat about Leeds, a former Leeds player himself. Talk about Leeds being promoted as well to the Premiership last night as well. Alan Cawley will be back right after this break. Don't go away. Very good morning. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Last chance with your lucky 15 from Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports. The four lucky 15 horses are Coconut in Newbury at the 12:30. The 155 in York is Moonlight Spirit. The 305 in York is El Astronaut. And the 445 in the Curragh, Master of Reality from Leon Blanche. Text win to 087 11 55 777 as well for a chance. Just before 11, just after our next interviewee, it is Alan Cawley, of course, from Cawley's Call. Now we'll have to introduce you as Alan. Cawley's Call, the new podcast. How's it going? How's it going?
Get on the podcast, yes, absolutely. The podcast king.
King of the pods.
Started last weekend, so a good reaction to it. It all started with you back in lockdown, to be honest with you. And there was many others, and we were having chats and Instagram chats on lockdown. So it's developed from there into the podcast now. So I launched it last week, and obviously trying to coincide with the restart of the League of Ireland. So there's going to be a weekly kind of League of Ireland Irish football show. And then I'm going to carry on with some of the chats as well. So tomorrow night now it's Andy Reid. So anyone out there who listens to the podcast, subscribe and tune in and all.
Brilliant. Well, Andy Reid will be very, very interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. And I played with Andy when I was young, and everybody knows the great career he went on to have. So he's very actually the chat now. He's big in... I suppose the change at the moment in Irish football with Stephen Kenny going in and that dynamic and everybody looking forward to it, he's very much a part of that as the under 18 manager and very passionate about it as well.
Brilliant. Big news, of course, Leeds, a team that you played with, of course, and great news for them and their fans that they're back in the Premiership next year.
It's massive news, Ken. Yeah, Twitter was alight last night with everybody kind of speaking about it and talking about it. And they're a massive club. And I think there's a link, I suppose, going back to the days of Johnny Giles, there's a massive link with Ireland as well. And obviously, while I was over there, you would have had hundreds coming over from Ireland on a weekly basis to watch them when they were in the Premier League. And I was fortunate enough to see a lot of that. Yeah. They have gone through the doldrums, as everybody knows, and the financial trouble. But to have them back, because everybody associates them with the top level football and a Premier League football. And I know we've had teams like Bournemouth and Huddersfield and Norwich, and no disrespect to them, like they're there on merit getting into the Premier League, but everybody associates the likes of Leeds, Nottingham Forest, Sheffield Wednesday to these clubs. They're massive clubs, Ken. It's brilliant to get Leeds back, and some of the fixtures next year now people will be already looking forward to because the major rivalry, Leeds United, Liverpool, Chelsea, that's great. It's really good.
Yeah, fun.
Good to chat to you, by the way. What do you think about their chances when they do get back in there with the squad that they have? I know they'll have to probably bolster it a little bit, but will they hold their own?
I think they will, Reggie, and the reason I say that is because they will have to bolster a little bit, but people have to remember, since Bielsa has come in, they've spent very little. He's worked with the players that he was, I suppose, given from day one, so it's a massive credit to him in terms of his coaching that he's improved those players massively to get them to the level that they're at, because a lot of them have been there a long time, and everybody speaks so highly of Bielsa. So not only the fact that Leeds are back, I think he'll be a massive addition to the Premier League as well, because you listen to any interview with Guardiola or Pochettino, they look up to him as being their mentor. He's a massive figure, really, in kind of the football over there when he was national team with Chile and stuff. So he's a huge figure, hugely influential. He's a bit of a character as well. And the football to play as well, the brand of football leads, they will have to bolster a little bit. Well, I think they will hold their own, Reggie.
Yeah, it should be interesting. We've got the semi-finals of the FA Cup this weekend, Alan, and two mouth-watering fixtures as well to look forward to.
Yeah, two great games, Ken. I'm looking forward to, because the Premier League is kind of, even though we were all looking forward to coming back, some of the games have been really disappointing, I have to say, you know, but I suppose it was just important that they got it back and got it finished properly, which they have. Looks like they will finish it off properly now, which is a good thing. But I think with these two games, there's a lot riding on them, and I'm really looking forward to them. Obviously, United back in great form as well. Chelsea having a good season with Lampard, so that should be a great game. Arteta has picked things up a little bit with Arsenal. It looks like they've improved a good bit. And obviously, Man City are Man City. So I think there'll be two brilliant games with lots riding on them. But I fancy Man City to beat Arsenal. And I fancy United to go on to beat Chelsea too. They're playing really, really well, Ken.
Yeah.
Especially going forward, Rashford, Greenwood, Martial. For the first time in a long time, it looks like there's the makings of a really good team again at United.
Yeah, and he's made such a difference, that Bruno Fernandes as well.
Oh, he's phenomenal. Yeah. He's like you on a Wednesday morning, Ken. Phenomenal. He is. He's a great player, Fernandes. Yeah, brilliant.
Alan, Harry, it's Peter. One of the real beneficiaries of the post-COVID schedule has been the Irish national team. There's a lot of players in real form, aren't they, at the moment?
Oh, absolutely. John Egan has had some... he's had a great season all along, Peter, to be fair, but he's got chipped in with a couple of goals. Sometimes the goals can bring you to people's recognition, but if you're watching the games, he's had a really consistent season with Sheffield United anyway. Matt Doherty's been very, very consistent over a period of 18 months, 2 years now, so it is exciting, as I say, with Stephen Kenny. Obviously, the games are only around the corner now. He'll be naming his first squad, and I'm sure he's itching to get involved with the lads as well. And as you rightly say, some of them, Coleman was man of the match against Liverpool a couple of weeks ago, even though Everton have been struggling, but Seamus seems to be back to himself as well. So
could we not mention the fella who equalised against Man United the other day, Obafemi? You know, look, where's the big elephant in the room, guys?
We can mention him as well, yeah, because the young talent as well, it's good to see, you know. So and I think that's what everybody's excited about, that it's going to be hopefully like a refreshing change, and it'd be interesting to see who Stephen will add in terms of the young lads and who he'll bring up to the squad.
Alan, we don't have much time left, but a very short, quick response about Man City getting away with the European only 10 million fine.
Yeah, I'd leave you wonder really about the whole financial fair play thing, Ken. I probably don't have long enough to go into it now, but it really would leave you kind of wondering. Yeah, exactly. Mourinho and Klopp were very vocal in their criticism during the week as well about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But sure, they're all spending millions as well. Like it's one thing Mourinho giving out. He gives out about everything, but sure, he was at something similar with Chelsea, and he wasn't crying when Abramovich was giving him all the money. So, you know.
Okay. Listen, Alan, always a pleasure getting you on. Best of luck with Cawley's Call. Look forward to having you back on next week.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, lads.
Okay, Alan Cawley there. Cawley's Call. Check it out. That's his podcast. The winner of our competition was Dermot Cronin from Castleknock. He wins the backballer. Congratulations to Dermot and everybody for texting in. We've got about 20 seconds, lads. Lovely show. It's gone really well. And hope you all have a good weekend. What are we doing, Reg? Football?
Yeah, young lads playing it over at home farm now at 1 o'clock. Going over to watch that one. Looking forward to it.
Okay, Peter.
Down to a friend's hotel in Pula Fuca this evening.
Good looking man. Forward to okay, it. Listen, thanks for listening to us on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. Thanks to insuremyvan.ie. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.